for tuning in to the Soy Chingona podcast. I am your host, E. Marie, and I'm very excited to be here today with my guest, Rosie. Thank you so much for allowing me in your space today, Rosie. Rosie, if you can do me a favor and tell my listeners, who is Rosie today?
Well, my name is Rosie Vasquez. I'm the Executive Director of Community Through Hope. You know, today I'm a proud mother of two wonderful children, an honored community member of the city of Chula Vista, and currently I'm just focused on trying to address the needs of the unsheltered and the underserved here in the South Bay area of the San Diego County.
Right. So tell me, before we get into, let's get into a little bit of Rosie first before we get into the conversation of your organization, because there's so much that your organization does and is doing right now and everything that you're preparing for. Tell me a little bit about your history as far as what you were involved in before your organization.
Sure. You know, I've had a couple different careers. You know, my first career was as a film and television agent here in San Diego and Los Angeles. I spent about another 12 years working in the charter school world, helping develop charters, doing designing back office for charter schools when they were kind of first coming here to San Diego. And about 11 years ago, I had a really tough time in my life. And during that crisis time, I felt that I had been called on a mission, a spiritual mission, kind of putting my faith into action to try and address the needs of the unsheltered and those that were facing crisis. I was very fortunate that when I was going through my tough times, I had an amazing support system, a family, a great foundation of community, and I was able to get through that difficult time. What I realized is I was very blessed and very fortunate. And there were so many other individuals that were going similar or other difficult times that were lacking this family foundation, education, resources. I was one of the lucky ones. And there came my mission to be able to use what I had learned through my tough time, try and help others get access to resources, whether it was through their church or the city or other nonprofits, organizations. How can we come together as a community to help our neighbors, help those that are really struggling? And I really do feel that in times of crisis, if you don't have a foundation of support, it's very easy to fall into the hole, whatever that is, mental health, addiction, lack of finances, losing family connections. All of those things are so important in helping us get through difficult times. So the mission was pretty clear. What can we do in our neighborhoods, in our city, in our local communities to try and help our neighbors? And be that beacon for them.
And it sounds like, too, like, you know, we've mentioned before when people are called to do work in the community and we go out and create things in our community, a lot of beautiful things that are created from a place of pain. Right? And a lot of it is being able to see the light or the beauty in the darkness, right? And then follow that. So it almost sounds like you went through something and then kind of felt a responsibility to pay it forward because you had all the support around you. So why unsheltered? Out of all the causes, and there's obviously tons of things that our community needs, why unsheltered?
During that time, I met a woman named Laura. And as we were going our separate ways, she shared with me how fortunate I was, and we got a little bit more into her story, and she had shared with me that she had pretty much been unsheltered since she was a child, and being unsheltered was her way of life, and she had a plan that in a few months she was probably going to ensure that she got arrested and that she would be going to the local county female jail And that's where she was going to spend her winter because it was probably the safest place for her to be inside. She wow. would have her daily needs met, three meals, something to wear, somewhere to sleep. And when I heard that, it was just unacceptable to me. I could not believe that I was hearing somebody say that being incarcerated was a better way of life than trying to navigate through a system that was never, she was just never able to put that piece of her life together, that foundation, that support. And it broke my heart. And it stayed with me for quite some time. And as I just meditated on that and prayed and just started really giving thanks for what I did have, this path just, you know, I'm a spiritually based person in my daily life. And I just really felt this kind of mission be revealed to me that, I was probably in a very good place to do some good. And after my crisis, I really felt I needed to give back. So I connected with my local church at St. Rose of Lima here in Chula Vista and said, how can I be of service? And that was 11 years ago. And just started designing programs, writing grants, rallying the troops, my neighbor, my cousins, I mean, anybody that was open to being part of solutions that could change the way our community looked at the unsheltered, looked at those that were facing food insecurity, and let's do some good. It became really obvious to me right away that this wasn't just something I wanted to do. I think a lot of folks wanted to find a way to plug in.
Right.
So the kind of light bulb went on, and I realized that, and within my skill set, I had the ability to start putting together volunteers and designing programs, writing grants to get funding so that we could implement these programs.
And then tell me about the birth of Community Through Hope.
Well, I've been really blessed. I was able to design and implement programs at St. Rose, like, bringing nutrition, fruits, vegetables, proteins, and grains to a small established food bank that was at St. Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Then we decided to write some grants and start implementing gardens, organic gardens, to grow fruits and vegetables that we weren't able to secure from the local food banks. Then the idea was, how can we continue to keep these programs going? So I designed a small but kind of effective thrift store at the church that, I'm really proud of, that is still thriving at St. Rose.
Yeah, still at St. Rose. They still goes on. Yeah.
And made a great connection with the Chula Vista Police Department. They kind of reached out to me and had heard about some of the programs and the work we were doing in the parks with the unsheltered, and asked if I could participate in helping create the community advocacy piece that we needed in the city to kind of bridge the gap from engaging someone at the street level and how we could kind of plug that into some of the city services.
Yeah.
And, we started that about four and a half years ago. From there, it became kind of evident that we needed to transition from what is the handout of here's some food, here's a sleeping bag, here's some clothes, we'll see you tomorrow, to how can we help this person move forward. So that's where the design for Community Through Hope started taking shape. It was transitioning from this handout opportunity to a hand-up opportunity. And what did that look like? And how could we open up dialogue with the clients that we were seeing on a daily basis to a new conversation around gaining understanding? What happened? Where did things really take you to a point where being on the street made more sense to you versus trying to continue to get back into your housing or looking for a job? And what started to develop is a tool that I've worked on for 11 years called the 15 Levels of Crisis, which was starting to data mine and get a better understanding of not who's street bound, but why are they street bound? What was the process of getting when you were sheltered to a point now where, you know, there's just nothing there. You know, there's no job, there's no family, a foundation, there's no support system, there's no option for sheltering. What we were able to put together was this, you know, these kind of stepping stones towards losing self-dignity, getting farther away from self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. Spending time understanding these levels and how somebody goes from having their own place to sleeping on a couch to then transitioning into just being living in your car to losing your car and to becoming street bound, the effects that it takes on people's mental health, the effects it takes on their physical health, their ability to now socialize. When the post-traumatic stress disorder kicks in, understanding why someone begins to self-medicate. And I think the most important thing was understanding where the crisis began. Was it an onset of more, you know, a mental health crisis? Was it self-choice to engage in recreational drugs? Was it the loss of a family member? Triggers from a divorce, injury from a car accident, loss of a job. You know, in a nutshell, what we found was that we needed several different models, modalities, and programs to address all the different individual needs, because there were so many variables. There was so many different, you know, it's not just personal choice. It's barriers that arrive that we as individuals who have never been in shelter or have successfully gotten through a crisis, we just don't understand.
Right, and we had talked about this before too, Rosie, about the connection that we don't make because we think that their situations and how they got to become unsheltered are so far-fetched from a person like me living a day-to-day life. Like, I'm so different from that person that got to that point. So it is really important that you're filling in the gaps in between of that misunderstanding, right? And it's filling up and letting people know how actually connected you are, how that is your neighbor that is on the street, how that is a doctor, how that was a person who was in college, how that was people that were living day-to-day lives just like we are, right? And making that connection. So it's so important to fill in these gaps of what the root is to these problems so that they're not repeated. And that you find these resources, right? And it's almost like getting to know the people in the unsheltered community to know what they really need.
Absolutely. You know, besides the 15 levels of crisis, we also worked on what we call a logic model, something that made sense. How does someone get to self-sufficiency? So what we realized was the first thing we could do to take some immediate action was to try and prevent someone from becoming unsheltered. Mm-hmm. And that prevention being intervening right away with regards to if someone's struggling accessing nutrition, chances are they're struggling paying their bills, which means rent's going to get harder to pay, which means eviction could be right around the corner. So we really focus a lot of time on prevention. The second phase was if someone was unsheltered, how do we intervene to get them to self-sufficiency? The third was we realized that intervention could be possibly getting temporary housing for someone. But if that person doesn't heal from the initial crisis of what took them down to their knees, of why they felt like they were drowning, four walls isn't necessarily going to fix that for some people. We have to implement some form of either mental, physical, emotional support, treatment to be able to help them heal so that if we can get them to a point where they have healed and now they can educate themselves on how to not slip backwards. What is that? You know, that education of how learning to get reemployed, of learning to access resources. What is it that they need to be self-sufficient? And the fifth step, I think, is the most important, and that's leadership. That's taking ownership of what happened, acknowledging that you've gotten through it, and now how do you use that experience and that knowledge and that wisdom to help someone else? And how do you become a leader and connect to somewhere like CTH, Community Through Hope, to be a beacon, to take your experience so that someone else doesn't need to go through that. So through prevention, intervention, healing, education, and leadership, what we found is that really is so critical. That those are the supportive case management services that we've designed, along with using the 15 levels to design a trauma-informed case management model, where we can, you know, be there about 365 days through that process. What that means is an individual may be able to access permanent housing in maybe 3-6 months, depending on where we were when we initially opened up the case, but knowing that support is going to be needed for an extended period of time, mm-hmm. to ensure that the self-sufficiency model is a daily, it continues, right. that they are, you know, making sure that they have support. You know, let's go over, you know, we've got you in an apartment and you're working. Let's make sure that those, what needs to get paid gets paid. Let's make sure that you have someone to talk to when you start to feel that maybe there's a little bit of a yellow or red flag starting up with your financial stability or your emotional stability. So I'm really, really proud of the work that the community has done, right. to embrace this model of trauma-informed care for the unsheltered. The other big piece is what we call Project Nutrition. And having this door available to us to engage prior to individuals or families becoming unsheltered through offering nutrition in the community. So, I really feel that we took the time as a grassroots organization to understand who we were serving,
right.
be able to identify gaps in service, be able to implement programs that we saw worked, connect with the right providers in the community, engage the, you know, local government, engage local services like fire and police department, and kind of help the community put those pieces of the puzzle together.
Right, and how they can, what they can provide to help. I think a lot of people, they want to help. They know that there's tons of organizations and there's tons of things out there, but you've been able to manage this connection between the community and the city, right? And bringing them all together so that everybody knows how they can help, right? And it's not just about giving somebody a shirt to wear a day. It goes so much deeper what you guys do in these programs. What I wanted to ask is, or what I wanted to get some insight on, is something that I've been hearing more in our media. I heard it actually this morning on a local news station. They had given out some statistic on unsheltered youth.
Right.
I think that is something that is very scary for people to hear. And I apologize for it being so scary, but it's real.
Right.
And the numbers are growing. Can you tell us and give us a little bit more insight on what's going on with our youth being unsheltered today?
Absolutely. What's exciting is that we're actually looking at and addressing this particular demographic of young children And what we're finding is that being unsheltered is can be a symptom of family dynamics at a very young age. We are now, because we're focused now on this issue, just like we focused on veterans, let's say, six or 7 years ago, right? So now we're looking at youth and seniors. With youth, what you're, you know, I think we need to absolutely be upfront with regards to our LGBTQ community and how, with the world the way it is right now, we would think that this wouldn't necessarily have to be a huge catalyst for young, our youth becoming unsheltered, but it really is. It truly is. And it's a shame. It's a shame. So I think we're, I'm excited that we're focusing immediately on the LGBT youth community. What we're also looking at is as it gets harder and harder for families to afford housing, what we're seeing is the disintegration of a family being able to keep everyone housed together. If you know, a minor is really struggling to plug in and a family isn't aware of services, it seems to be easy to just try and, you know, cast away that issue that some of our youth are going through. So what we've found as we gather information is just, you know, a misunderstanding of what youth are going through now in our society. And really it's a generational factor, an issue of just, I don't understand. I don't understand the phone. I don't understand the internet. I don't know why you're doing this, and this huge disconnect, you know, as much as it's so important to be locked in, you know, I'm a huge advocate of, you know, put down the phone and talk to your children. And a lot of that's not happening. And so parents miss cues. And what we find is just this disconnect and not knowing how to communicate. And you find the youth feel that they're better off. And then instead of trying to deal with the pressures that a family now faces, you know, we didn't hear a lot about people being unsheltered. There's been homelessness forever.
Right.
It's just that, you know, we didn't talk about it forever, right? So now over the last, you know, I would say, you know, 15 years, it's on everyone's radar. There's an awareness.
Right.
But since we haven't dialogued about it, these huge subpopulations have grown and grown. And, you know, I'm a half glass, you know, half full type person. So I'm excited about now with new grants coming down, such as the HEAP funding, which is the homeless emergency grant that was given to our county through the regional task force. A lot of organizations were open to or are going to enhance their unsheltered programs to include really targeting the youth population. And I'd like to think, just like we have done, I feel, a great job in our county moving past awareness and taking action with our veterans, that we are going to do the same for our youth. We have to address the big issue in the room, which is mental health.
Yes.
Okay, that what we're seeing are large populations of youth whose families are not aware of programs for mental health, especially in the demographics, you know, with families of color, with our Latinos, African Americans, especially, you know, Asian population. These are things that normally, culturally, we would deal with at home.
Right.
There are programs
the lack
that
of
are
not doing
right. Right. Yeah, this is just we
right.
hold it close to our vest,
right?
And what we need to do as families and parents is to reach out, to be not just awareness, but to take action. To take action with our family members who are going through mental health issues. We need to address how prevalent right now and how easy it is for our youth to access drugs, alcohol, you know, self-medicating versus, you know, we self-medicate before we realize that we're prevalent to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, I'm hoping that through what we call diversion, which is bringing awareness to an issue,
mm-hmm.
through prevention, discussing issues as they arise in the family dynamic instead of trying to hope that they go away,
right.
What we need to make, what we need to bring awareness is that there is help out there.
Right.
It's only fair to say that 10 or 15 years ago, there was not. It was only available to families who had money. Now, I feel the county has done and is doing a good job and will continue to build on programs that are accessible through Medi-Cal to be able to get individuals into detox and rehab. I feel it's really important to share that I'm really proud to live in the San Diego County. I'm extremely proud to be a Chula Vista resident where there's been a shift in the narrative. We're not talking about what we should do. We're actually doing
mm-hmm.
things.
Right.
And that's why Community Through Hope is here. We received a lot of support from the county. This agency gets county support. It gets support from the District Attorney's Office of San Diego, the City of Chula Vista, the Police Department. We're expanding right now to partner with the City of National City, San Ysidro, Imperial Beach. I'm so excited that the time is now.
Right.
So we, as a county, I feel the narrative's going to be shifting in a really positive way. That time has been spent to get programs up and running.
Right.
Community Through Hope is a great example, and why we named it Community Through Hope, because the community of Chula Vista and our partners and supporters in the South Bay realize that an agency like ours is was a missing piece. Was we needed a beacon somewhere where volunteers could come and say, you know, not only do I need help, but I want to help.
Right.
The, you know, PD coming and saying, we can't do this without, you know, folks who understand the unsheltered. And that's those, you know, grassroots organizations like we were, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm really hoping that in the next 3 years, we'll start to see some change in the percentage of youth being able to have active programs that are addressing their specific needs. You know, I'm excited about being able to drive home the message that there used to be a time where it was very obvious of who the have and the have-nots are.
Yes.
That no longer exists in our world, mm-hmm. and especially, at least in our area. We have, you know, youth from affluent families that are in shelter. We have seniors over the age of 2. It's one of the largest growing populations in the South Bay. 20% growth in seniors over the age of 62 that are unsheltered.
Wow.
That have... We weren't able to get programs fast enough. We have some now. You know, there was a time where, you know, the veteran services, for veterans were, you know, we needed to address that, and we did. That number has gone down, and, you know, I'm very proud of our county for addressing that. We need to shift now.
Has it, with the shift, has it been an effort of the city and the county making sure that people are more aware of these programs? It's just, I'm asking because it's a weird thing, because growing up, you know, I would hear, there's programs out there. There's shelters out there. Mija, don't give them any money. they have resources. They have places to go. They're choosing to stand out here with their signs instead of going and getting help. That was such, like, a big thing when I was little. It was always, like, and my grandma was very adamant about not giving the unsheltered money. She was such, like, no, all they're going to do is spend it on alcohol.
Right.
And I remember her getting upset at me, and I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I had told her, and I said, I gave this unsheltered man, must have been like a dollar, right? And she got upset because she gave me the dollar to spend it on myself when I went into the liquor store. And she got upset, and she said, all he's going to do is go back in there and buy alcohol, right? And I'm not even at that age, like, I'm not understanding, like, what the big deal is. But I had said to her, what does it matter what he spends that dollar on? God knows that I just gave him a dollar because I felt he needed it more than me. It was plain and simple. My grandma was so pissed off at me because of that. But it, again, it was like this thing of, like, they can go get help. They're choosing not to. And that was always put in my head as a kid. Like, why would they want to choose to be out here instead of get help with all these programs? So, like you're saying, the programs weren't as strong. There wasn't as many 10, 15 years ago like there are now. Was there still programs that were available? Was it just not as accessible? Obviously, there's computers now, and there's phones that you can... But I don't see unsheltered having access to a computer to get on there and go research and find programs. How do they get the access to the programs? How do they find you?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I think I want to go back to your original story with your grandma. And, you know, and I think there's some reality to that. I think there's a certain population of the unsheltered. They've been on the street so long, it's all they know. And there is a choice. We all are accountable for our actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we are not factoring in is that there was a huge point in time where there was no access to programs. So, you know, what we have now is programs for those that have a phone, know how to use a computer. They can go into a library, use a computer, but there is no specific database for the unsheltered to just go and get what it is that they need. What we're also looking at is the responsibility of the county, of the city. You know, mm-hmm. We need all the parts to work. This county,
all the puzzle pieces.
The county may get dollars, but if there aren't agencies that have active homeless outreach programs, what we're doing is just kind of passing the buck. Okay, you call the county, okay, go to this agency, but they don't have an active program that actually addresses the needs and case management that's needed for the unsheltered. So we still have a huge disconnect. We have a lot of work to do, but I do feel that we've moved past that. Mm-hmm. With regards to access, I'm excited to share that I was very fortunate to be asked to help mentor a group of high school students that are currently being mentored by USD and the Joan Kroc Center for Peace and Justice.
Okay.
So we right now have some really bright high schoolers that are putting together a website that will specifically be for the unsheltered to be able to access at the local library level, as well as you know, getting it out through social media to be able for them on a daily to be able to check in and see programs that are active that day, places where they can go to outreach centers or that have actual components that can help them. We have some wonderful services, but they do not yet have active programs that address the needs of the unsheltered. So definitely something and a goal over the next year to be able to kind of streamline how the unsheltered and the underserved can not have to go through this bureaucratic red tape
mm-hmm.
and wait 3 weeks to get a phone call back from somebody who has a caseload of 200 individuals where maybe only 20 of them are unsheltered. what we do here at Community Through Hope is use a lot of social media to share what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We also do street outreach to get the word out that our agency is now active and available for to come and get the kind of help they need.
Mm-hmm.
Here at CTH, we only focus on two main missions, the unsheltered and those that are facing food insecurity and that are underserved.
Okay.
So two different populations that right. need specific services.
Mm-hmm.
So those are families that are, you know, in jeopardy of losing their housing. And then those that are street bound, car bound, that kind of stuff. So we've been able, as an agency, to just focus on two populations. And then if we cannot serve them, having direct services, cutting through the red tape, and connecting them immediately with programs that we know serve
what their needs are.
We've spent a lot of time developing this multidisciplinary approach to services. So what that means is using CTH, our building, as a beacon for mm-hmm. service providers to actually be able to come here and see their clients. Huge shout out to, you know, McAllister Institute, HHSA, Family Health Centers, San Isidro Health Center. I mean, there, you know, we've got I can't even tell you how large of a web of services we have that we know as an agency we have to be in partnership with so that we can cut through that red tape.
Outsource for what you can't
provide. Absolutely, absolutely.
Right.
Do a warm handoff.
Right.
Already have clients that are pre-screened. So we're not calling an agency like, do you think you can help them? No, we know they can help them because we've already done the right.
You have that like, rapport already with them.
We've
so
done the assessment.
Right into when you're passing off mm-hmm. someone, and like you said, that warm. I like that.
Yeah.
Because it is like, okay, we can't help you, but we're going to set you up with people who we know that can. We're not just going to shoot you out the door and throw you into the dark, and that's that.
You said something really important right now, people who can. And I think, you know, clients need to take accountability for their particular situation. Can we help individuals who are unsheltered, who are ready to address their addiction, who are prepared to address their mental health, that are willing to start from scratch, driver's license, social security, birth certificate, for individuals who are ready to do their part? That process can go pretty quick because we've developed the web of services. The big issue, and that will continue to be an issue until we can build relationships with these clients that have lost hope, that don't remember what it's like to be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. The brokenness is so, overwhelming that they need a space where they can come and just belong. So we can get them to believe.
Yeah.
That was a huge component of this, our mission as a nonprofit, to be a place where clients could come and just sit and get the lay of the land and build some trust and communication with us so that we can kind of pull away those layers of hurt and lack of connection. And that's a huge missing piece. And it goes back to what we talked about, you know, the understanding of what happened. And this is a safe place for you to share your story without any judgment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our staff has been in shelter. Half of our staff is in recovery from addiction. A lot of our staff have worked in the social services. And at the minimum, we're all human beings and we're all flawed and broken. And I think we all realize we're all broken crayons. We can just still color. and we approach it from that perspective, from one human being relating to someone who's hurting, and going from there. And that seems to be resonating even with those individuals that are not ready for support.
Right.
They're not ready to take the steps towards self-sufficiency, but at least we know who they are,
yeah,
what happened, and getting the word out that when you're ready, we're ready.
Right.
And this isn't another, you know, a lot of folks that have been in shelter for a long time, when they needed help and asked for it, it just wasn't there. There were no programs.
Right, so they've lost their confidence.
Absolutely.
In just humanity in itself, right? Because they've gone through so many knockdowns on what they've been...
And that's understanding. I think the guy that you see on the corner that's holding up the sign, I would venture to say that at one time, he or she asked for help. Someone stopped in their car feeling really compassionate and said, I'll be right back, I'll bring you this, and it didn't happen. Their life took over, and that let down after let down. That doesn't mean they're not responsible. That doesn't mean they're not accountable.
Right.
You know, 11 years ago, I was all about the handout. I was trying, you know, I was trying to make up for my stuff. And I'm like, take my blanket, take my jacket, take my, what do I got to give you?
Take it
all, you know?
You?
And I could go home and be like, oh, at least that guy's gonna eat, you know? I mean, that's beautiful. And I'm glad that I was raised by an amazing family that was very compassionate and in service. But it's not fair to put somebody under a microscope and to immediately assume that they did not ask for help. It's a huge, a judgment call. That is not the case for everyone. I think it's okay to say that unsheltered individual has some accountability to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that dignity is God-given. No one can ever take that away from you. We just forget that. So a lot of it is just, let's take the word homeless. That's why you won't hear me use that word, other than to describe and share why I use the word unsheltered. I wish there was a better, terminology for that. What is that? Those without a residence, permanent residence, right? But... just the word homeless. It already says you're less than just because you don't have four walls. Barrier, instant barrier when you use that word, identifying someone. We deal with people on the daily that are so offended by that word because they would say, you know, I'm an individual that hit a crisis, and when I needed help, I just didn't know where to go. And the people I thought were going to help me didn't want to. And because of either my mental health or because I am ill with addiction, you know, I was immediately kind of cast out. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. So I like to think our agency hovers somewhere in the middle as the bridge. We are a bridge. We are completely client-centered. You know, we have to be, because... you and I are both Latinas. We, you know, we seem, you know, somewhere between, you know, I'd say, you know, 35 and 55. but short of just what we see visually, any of these things that we're discussing could affect us in 2 months. And without the proper support services, either one of us could end up unsheltered or living in our car. Again, there's that line is gone with the obvious, oh, nothing's going to happen to Rosie. Nothing's going to happen
right.
to,
yes,
you know, that
yes.
person, because, oh, they've got this and they've got that. We don't live in that world anymore.
Right.
We just don't.
Right.
And,
you know. It's changing that thing, like you said, it's changing that awareness into the action. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that goes along with a lot of things that you guys are doing. Moving forward in the events that you have going on, can you touch upon some of the things that you guys do as far as community events and the things that you do to, you know, raise the awareness and the funds of community through hope?
Absolutely. With Project Nutrition, we are and have the first nutrition bank. We are a redistribution hub with Feeding San Diego and San Diego Food Bank. So now, through the nutrition bank, we're able to service other small nutrition pantries and accelerate nutrition into the community through our three different distribution sites. So we distribute in National City, Chula Vista, and IB right now. Hopefully we'll be starting up a new distribution in San Isidro. Last month alone, we gave out over 10,000 pounds of nutrition. So that's awesome. So we use the nutrition bank. We are out monthly through Project Hope, offering a outreach event to the unsheltered. We service anywhere between 50 to 75 people. We roam this mobile unsheltered, what I call mass unit, throughout the four quadrants of the city.
Okay.
And we'll be expanding into National City, San Isidro, and Imperial Beach probably by the end of the year. Other events that we do is we offer nutrition classes to current small pantries and help educate new organizations, a lot of faith-based organizations that want to open up and join our efforts with food insecurity. We've been offering, over the summer, we'll have three different legal clinics addressing immigration, family law, and record expungement. We're really ramping up and are super excited to talk about the Heart of the City Music and Arts Festival coming up on October 5th. One of our sister agencies, Love Thy Neighbor Movement, we're so excited. We actually extended space here in our building so that we could work together as a small but mighty nonprofits to take action around the underserved and the unsheltered. So we've joined together. We've designed this amazing music and arts festival to bring awareness to cause, culture, and community. We've partnered with Live Nation, which has been wonderful. We'll be holding the first of its kind fundraising festival in at the North Island Credit Union, bringing in five wonderful headliners, a lot of arts that we're hoping will affect our concert goers to take action. A lot of the art's going to be focused on interactive experiences, hoping to share what it's like to become unsheltered, how to prevent that. We're really excited. We think it's a really unique way to engage the community. Hopefully gonna get some great sponsors to support our efforts. The net proceeds will flow to current projects that Love Thy Neighbor and Community Through Hope are working on, and we hope to also be able to then support other nonprofits that are like-minded and client-centered and ask them to join in our efforts. It's the first of its kind. We got a lot of city support, and we're really looking for, the county seems to be very excited. I think we're just doing something different. I think we're staying true to our missions as nonprofits. We work with the poor. We work with the unsheltered. A lot of our neighbors cannot afford to go. They want to support what we're doing in the community, but $150 ticket to a gala is just unreasonable. I don't think I could even afford a $150 ticket to a gala. So we thought, what can we do to really engage and offer the community an experience to be part of something greater than themselves? We hope to inspire individuals who think they can't make a difference, that they are the ones that are going to make a difference by buying a concert ticket and being together as a community, celebrating the great work that's getting done, and hopefully thinking globally about where we can go with right. these efforts,
encouraging
working together.
To look at that, right, and look at the bigger scales and see how we can all be a part of something. And I'm really excited because as a podcaster for Soy Chingona, we will be a part of this event too.
Yes.
And I say we, like I have like a whole crew of people or something. I'm like, yeah, me and my whole team over here. Ruben from Love Thy Neighbor told me about it in 2 seconds, and I was like, yes, whatever you need me to do, like, yes, let me be a part of it, because it was just this exciting thing of all these different puzzle pieces, again, like you were referring to before, all these puzzle pieces coming together and showing everybody else in the community how much we can do together, and how much you guys have done already, and how much more there is to do, and how to, that important word of being engaged. And having that engagement of the community, the city, these nonprofit organizations all coming together for one cause is pretty amazing. And I'm really excited to be brought into it, to be a part of it. And this whole experience is going to be really awesome. So I'm super excited.
Me too.
Yeah, I think we've all been really excited. Just everybody that's involved is so excited. And I think you're right. I think it is something different. And so we're just like, everyone's like, yes, something new and exciting to create and come together. How is that not going to be a beautiful thing and a beautiful day?
Well, you know, it's that excitement, I think, that really affirms that we're doing the right thing, that this is the right time to bring the county together. It's the right time to change the narrative to action. You know, just looking even at the team that's working on this concert, you know, we've got, you know, jeepers, just such a great array of organizers, you know, a lot of great young minds, you know,
so
a lot of those
cool
millennials.
So
absolutely.
Cool,
as we share out with the community, you know, it's just been these open doors. You know, this agency got established because as we were designing and implementing, going to these different partners, you know, a door never slammed shut, which tells me we're doing the right thing. We're on the right track. And the concert really developed that well, as well, you know. Ruben and I went and met with Live Nation. We thought we'd have half an hour, and 2 hours later, the GM was like, this is it. We've been wanting to do something like this. We just needed the right cause,
right.
You know, something community-based.
Right.
And when we took it to the city as well, you know, the mayor's like, this is cool. This is what we've been waiting for to support. And, you know, again, you know, born and raised in Chula, lived my 53 years here. And there's been times where I've been disappointed that we couldn't get, we wanted to do things right away,
mm-hmm.
and it's taken time, but I do think we've turned that corner,
right?
And we're all
time
working together.
It is the right time. It really
yeah.
is. You know, something that I wanted to ask you as we get to closing up on this episode, I did want to ask you about maybe some advice that you can give out there to the listeners that are involved in community work. As being a person who's out there in the community, does a lot of work, it does get really draining because you're putting so much of you out there. For you running this organization, how do you not take your work home?
Ooh, I do take my work home. I think that's okay. I'm fortunate. I have two wonderful children that are now grown and thriving adults that allow me to follow this dream. I am mindful and am learning to not become a workaholic, and I have a wonderful partner, my partner Mark, and he's amazing and he keeps me really grounded. You know, my advice would be that for anybody who is committed to a mission and feels this higher calling, is to surround yourself with individuals who understand you. You don't need 50 million people. You just need kind of like those five people on that hand
yeah.
that understand the pressure especially if you're in ED and mm-hmm. there's a lot of responsibility. Just to be mindful, to be spiritually grounded, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah.
To take care of yourself, because if you wear yourself down, the machine doesn't keep going. To find those moments during an event or a project. I know I always look for it. I'm waiting for it. Where my side gig is, I like to throw jazz concerts at the El Primero Hotel when I'm bored during the summer. Actually, that's my little social venture, even for me as someone in service.
Mm-hmm.
I still volunteer, and I give of my time through my church. I give of my time. I try and balance what it is service looks like for me. One thing is, what is my work and my mission? And another thing is making sure that I stay balanced and I volunteer outside of this organization. So I serve at my church, and I also serve being, I have a philanthropic partner, Karen Roque from the El Primero Hotel, and we throw these jazz concerts called Jazz on Third, Music for a Cause. And we picked other nonprofits, and we give net proceeds out. We're gonna be doing one August 17th for Children's Rady Hospital for the NICU unit, because we both had kids that were miracle babies. So I try and stay in service outside of this community of hope.
Huh.
I try and keep my life balanced that way, to understand that it's not just about this place, it's about being of service. So
that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, I think, you know, I need to have my perspective that
right.
we are not the only agency, we're not the only nonprofit, you know, we're not the only volunteers or
right.
machine that's trying to do good. There's so many other folks doing great work, and I feel a responsibility to support them as well. So balance, you know, trying to walk the walk. You know, promoting my own nutrition, promoting my
right.
own well-being, my own mental health. I mean, just trying
yeah.
to remember that, you know, what is my piece of the puzzle
yeah.
as Rosie,
right.
you know? And I have an amazing blessing that I have I still have my mom. She's 94 years old,
wow.
and she's almost lived 100 years. And being open to wisdom, to continue, I don't have all the answers. I learn something new every day about this mission. I've met some incredible, resilient, brave human beings that are so inspiring to me, that keep me grounded
yeah.
and grateful and humble. So I think it's just perspective and being able to take myself out of the equation and see the... feeling honored to be able to be part of somebody else's puzzle. You know, whether it's big or little, to just trying to be mindful that, you know, I'm trudging through life just like everybody else.
Right.
And there's no difference between you or me or anyone else, other than I'm really grateful that I found a purpose in life that gets me up every day.
It's beautiful, Rosie. I really like that. That was really nice. Just the way that you put that was very nice. And I do have to point out that the statement that you made of how important it is for you to still volunteer and still do other things and make sure that you're still supporting other organizations outside of what you created is really, really awesome. Because I mean, obviously, there's so much things in this world that's needed right now for when it comes to community and resources. But the more, to me, the more you're giving, the more your organization's going to get to, right? Because you being the lead on this organization, what a great example of leadership. You have this organization that you created, that you made, and you put your heart and soul into, and you're still balancing, putting out even more than what you just created, because and that balance that you're putting out there gives a beautiful balance to your organization. I'm a firm believer in you get what you give. So if you keep wanting to get more, then you keep giving, right?
Right.
And as long as you keep giving, then you're okay to keep receiving. you know, but it sounds like you are really have found that balance into what you've created and what you put out and just making it all cohesive and making it all flow together. And obviously that's how you can get all these amazing organizations to work together.
You know,
great thing that you've done there.
I have some great mentors. And I, you know, I'm super thankful. When I first kind of got this call, I met an amazing lady named Trudy Balestrieri. And she said, you know, if you always stay centered on your clients and you will always, for you, if this is a faith, you know, keep that faith in action, was huge for me. And that's just a mantra I use every day. I met an amazing, the director of the South Bay Pioneers, a gentleman named Tom Clavel. And when I was would get frustrated or something, this nonprofit, it's a sober living environment, they would always show up, and I could just call them, I need a couple guys, or I don't have a truck, or I need a boombox. And I was watching this nonprofit, really foundation established, and this is a huge piece of what they do. They constantly give back to the community. Since the first day of Hope, we're on our fourth year, they have always provided the nutrition for that day for free. And he taught me that. He said, you know, hey, you as an organization, you need to give back. You always need to remember there's so much going on outside yourself. So I'm super thankful to him. I met an amazing lady named Ann Rios. She used to be the executive director of Think Dignity, which is they provide so many services to the unsheltered, but they were willing to come down here to Chula Vista and provide us their mobile showers. And there hasn't, I think, once out of 4.5 years, that agency has been at every day of Hope, providing shower service. They didn't charge anything. They just knew that the best way to lift up their nonprofit was to lift up other nonprofits. So I really took that to heart. And, you know, the day that we had our grand opening, which was November 9th here in this awesome building, they were all here. They were all here, and because, you know, I think the last piece was I had a huge, what I call, she was my partner in Hope. Her name was Corey Daniels, and she's one of the founders of this agency. And she volunteered with me pretty much for 6 years for free. She put her life on hold because she saw that I might have been onto something, and she knew that every day I was going to need somebody. Keep going. Don't give up. Mm-hmm. Keep going, you know? And when we actually were able to sign the lease on this building, and I was like, oh, okay, we need to do this, this, and this. And somebody asked me, where did you get that from? And I said, you know, I don't know. I guess it's been in my head. It's been in my head. And she said, hey, you know what? Here's this piece of paper that you drew like 4 years ago, and I saved it. Looks exactly, this is what we've been going towards. So, you know, circling around, when you have an opportunity to make a dream come true, when you have an opportunity to make a difference at whatever level, big or little, never too old, never too young, whatever that is, what I found is it usually starts with the people around you who start nudging you forward and are just like, hey, have you thought of, you know, listen, don't be afraid. I know that there's only two ways to live. You're either in fear or you're in faith. And I choose faith every day. So that's my advice to anybody, anyone, young, old, you know, short, tall. You know, if you have a dream, you have two choices. You can either be fearful of trying, or you can believe in yourself and surround yourself with people who get you and know that for you to be your best, they need to support. And you'll grab, you know, you'll put it out there, and you're going to get the people that are going to come and lift you up. You know, I've been able to be the piece of the puzzle because a lot of people lift me up every day. Yeah. So I'm super thankful.
Yeah.
Super thankful.
And I think it is, I mean, being in an organization like this, the community work that you do, it's just reminds you how much you need to be grateful for everything that you're given every single day. It's something I've been working on this year. I made it just such a personal goal of mine to work on the things that I'm grateful for, because those are the things that are so easy to take for granted and so easy to forget that those are positive things in my life. They're just so easy to slip away from me. So that's something that, that gratefulness of just being grateful for the little things that make up your day is so important to what you're going to put out there in the world and what you're going to receive. You know, and that's something that it sounds like, not sounds like, but I think when you work in community and it's important to just make sure that you stop in those moments of what you're creating, because there's so many beautiful things that you're doing right now for the community, and there's so many things that you're doing for the people in your community, but it is important to stop, be grateful for the things that you have, and then also give yourself the credit for what you're doing in the community. You have done so much, Rosie, and you're still, there's so much more I know that you're going to be doing and creating. But I hope you do give yourself those times too where you stop and you give yourself the credit for what you've created and what you've done, because you're creating so much change in people. You're inspiring people to want to be a part of change and create more things. And it's just a really beautiful thing to be around. And so in meeting you has been really awesome, and just have such this strong energy with you. And, you know, I told you before I spoke to you here and there a little bit, and I was just craving to hear more. And you know, you're the perfect person for a person like me to be around, because I really have worked on surrounding myself with good people around me. And in meeting you, you just have this energy that I leave here ready to give more of myself.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, you know, I have to give credit, and that's hard. That's a hard thing for me to do. I think when you do this kind of work, you gotta, you know, I try every day to keep myself as small as I can, and even though I can't always control that,
right,
I think it's important to approach a lot of this work with a sense of gratefulness. And the staff that's here, the dedication, you know, I heard a story about, you know, when I first started, I was in the back of the line. I was learning and trying to learn how to be in service.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of, you know, got moved up into the middle of the line where I was training people, maybe kind of how to be in service while I was watching folks who had done it before me and trying to continue to learn. You know, I do feel that, you know, right now, my higher power, my God has me in the front of the line. But, you know, there's no line if there isn't, you're not supported. And that line to me is not me in the front with, you know, and people are behind me. It's a line where maybe I'm in the middle, but the line is you know, horizontal, right?
Right.
I mean, everybody's standing next to me.
Right.
You know, and I'm thankful. I'm thankful that I've been able to be in service, but I'm even more grateful that of everyone else that has chosen to be on the front lines. You know, they're, you know, CTH, it's, you know, that's why we chose the name so carefully, that everything that happens here is not one person. It's a community of volunteers, neighbors, professionals working together, because it's hard to do it by yourself. It's hard to do it by yourself. You know, I'm not afraid anymore because I'm not by myself.
Right.
I don't have to be fearful that we're not going to get something done or help move somebody forward, because there are so many people that are invested to the same degree that I am. You know, it's just sometimes, you put the, you know, biggest talker up in the front, you know, and I'm thankful. I'm thankful that people are allowing me to lead. I'm really grateful for that, you know, but thank you. I mean, I think what you do is absolutely awesome, and you're giving an opportunity to individuals like myself who do have some important information to share, and we can't always get to the right individuals to see how that moves forward. So what you do is super important. It really is, and just feel really thankful that you're giving CTH a voice, and especially you're giving the unsheltered a voice. And hopefully folks who hear this are going to be inspired to take some action.
Right. And that's the mission going forward, right? Is now we've done a lot of work on awareness on these things, and now it is motivating people to get engaged and to put, you know, that action out there, because that is what makes the difference, and that is what causes change, right? Is all these people getting together. So I'm really excited. Like I said, I'm really grateful that you allowed me to come into your space today and be able to share this. So I'm excited that you were excited about coming on, Rosie. So I appreciate, like I said, you allowing me to come into your space, and you allow me to be a part of something that's bigger than me, because that's, you know, that's what gives me light every day, you know, is being able to be part of things that are greater than myself. It just shows you how small you are in this big, huge world. And, you know, your organization provides that to a lot of people. So I appreciate that. I love what you've done so far, Rosie, and I love what you're doing and all the things that are going from here. Can you tell people where to find your organization, whether it's online, Instagram, your social media and stuff?
Absolutely. We can be found at www.communitythroughhope.org. We're on Instagram, Facebook. Please go check out the Heart of the City Music Fest.
Yes.
Our website's going live on next Wednesday, but Instagram and Facebook are up. We'll be looking for volunteers that want to be able to help out that day. So you'll be able to sign up if you're interested in volunteering at the Heart of the City Music Festival, as well as with Community Through Hope. Any of the programs that I mentioned today, everything's on our website. It's really interactive. For anyone interested in volunteering, you know, whether it's an hour or it's a week, you know, you can make such a difference during that time. There's a lot of work that happens here, and you know, I look forward to seeing, you know, anyone that's interested in plugging in.
Yeah, and come check out this space, because this warehouse is amazing. You would never know when you walk through the door how much is going on behind that second door. Like, you have no idea. It's a whole nother world going on. You guys have a lot going on just in this space itself, and it was really cool for me to be able to go through here. And it was amazing to me when I first walked back there, and I was like, oh, there's a whole nother world
right
back here of all the things you're providing.
We have our case management team here. We have the redistribution nutrition bank here. Mm-hmm. We have a community classroom here. We have our Hope Chest thrift boutique where clients can access for free Tuesday through Friday, and on Saturday we're open 9 to 1. We have a donation center here. We have a storage facility for the unsheltered here. It's also the Chula Vista Hot Teens hub, and a hub for a lot of different providers. So, you know, it's a great place to work. It's a great place to serve. And, you know, we just really hope we've provided a beacon for the community.
Yeah, well, you definitely have.
Thank you, dear. Thank you.
No one hoping that you will create that, because you have. It's created and it's here. And, again, thank you so much for being on the show, Rosie. I appreciate your time. And until then, fist up, chingonas.